Olé! Olé! It's showtime!
You are listening to The Mini Minxes, the UK's newest Disney podcast. It's a mischievous way to start your week. Disney girl power!
Welcome everybody to episode 14 of The Mini Minxes. As always, I'm your host Kimmy, and joining me this week, as always, is the lovely Michelle.
Hi Kim!
Hello Michelle! Did you enjoy the last episode?
I did indeed. We've had quite a lot of feedback, which was lovely to read.
Have you found any hidden Mickeys around your house?
Oh, do you know, it was quite funny actually, because I was listening to the podcast again, and Kieran and Emily were in the car with me, and Kieran said, "Do you know what, Mum? I think it'd be really cool if we started hiding hidden Mickeys for you around the house for you to find." And I thought, yeah, go on then, off you go, love. And then my daughter the other day, she set the dining table and she'd put the plates to make a hidden Mickey. And she said, "Look, Mum, it's a hidden Mickey." And it was like, oh, I am so proud of you. Small things, please, little minds, but... yeah, I just love speaking to Stephen Barrett. I really, really did. And I've been and trekked myself. I've got the new update of the Hidden Mickey book. So I'm all up to date, ready to hunt my hidden Mickeys. Haven't yet bought the app. I gather Tom's got it on his phone so we can do the metal detector type thing round as we wander round and look for some. So that should be quite good fun. What about yourself?
Oh, no, I mean, I've liked hidden Mickeys for a while, and to actually speak to somebody that has a great deal of knowledge about the hidden Mickeys, it was certainly an interesting interview to do. Probably one of the most interesting ones I've done so far.
We're very lucky with the guests we get at the moment. We're getting some really fabulous people on.
We are, and I'm not going to say who, but we've got quite a few fabulous people coming up. I don't know how we're doing it, but they're obviously liking this British girly charm, Michelle, because we're getting quite a few people to agree to come on.
Or is it the fact we just end up stalking people and email them until we wear the patience down?
Yeah, I'm thinking of one particular guest. I'm not going to say his name, but yes, one particular guest has finally been worn down and he will be coming on, thank God.
Yeah, it's taken a lot of emails, but fingers crossed, I'm just waiting for a recording date on that one, so I won't give the game away. I'll say who it is later on.
And are we allowed to say that they're going to be on around Halloweenish time?
Just all depends on if we can manage to sort out our schedules.
Oh dear. Ah, well, everyone keep tuned for that. Well, I best stop rabbiting on, really, and let everybody know what we've got coming up on this episode. Joining us on this episode is the lovely Kathy Kelly, who's joining us to speak about guest assistants at Walt Disney World.
She is indeed, and we had Kathy and myself sort of took the bull by the horns and sort of had a big discussion between the two of us, because between us we've both got quite a lot of experience and knowledge in this area, Kathy more than myself. Obviously, Kim, you've not got that issue. So you were sort of like sat in the sidelines listening avidly. So I hope you picked up one or two pointers if you ever came across having to have a special need.
I certainly did. And as our listeners will hear, I don't think I actually speak from the intro of the interview. But listening to the pair of you, I didn't realise, and I think I said this to Kathy after the interview, I didn't realise it was a problem. Naive of me, I know. And I skip around there and think everything's happy-go-lucky. I didn't realise the issues and the problems that some people do come up against. And it certainly made me appreciate my time at Walt Disney World a lot more. And it'll also, I think, make me have my eyes open a bit more. And possibly if I do see people out there that need assistance, probably offering a bit of help or seeing if there's anything I can do for them.
Yeah, true. I must admit, there is such a wide range of help Disney can try to offer. Anyway, we'll get into that later. But yeah, that's a really, really good feature we've got coming up in the show. We've got a couple of other bits though to tantalise our listeners as well, haven't we, Miss Kim?
We have, yeah. We well, me and Michelle are going to have a bit of a debate. We thought, you know what, we haven't done anything with just me and Michelle for a while. All these fabulous people we keep having on. So we've decided we're going to have a little bit of a debate. And the debate's going to be the state of the Disney stores in the UK.
Ooh.
Where I think you might find I may get a little vocal, unlike the interview. You may hear a lot from me.
Oh, dear.
So, if you're ready for me to be ranting, stay tuned for that. And then I believe, Michelle, you have a question from one of our two listeners.
Yeah, we've got a lovely question coming up about rope drop, and I've extended it a little bit to give a little bit of detail about what welcome ceremonies there are at the main four Disney parks over there in Walt Disney World, and I'll chatter on about that later on.
Are you going to tell everybody who asked the question?
Stephen Maxwell.
No.
I know.
I've never heard from that man. I don't know who you're talking about.
It's funny enough because I went on checked our email earlier today and he sent me another question as well.
Oh, Stephen. We love Stephen.
Superstar. So I'm going to do some research on the other question, but also I'm asking our listeners out there, if you've any experience of using the new PhotoPass Plus, can you please get in touch with me with what you thought? Because there have been a few issues with it. I'd just like to see, you know, has anyone used it successfully? Anyone had any issues? I know I intend to use it over the next few weeks, but $169, it's a lot of money if you're not going to get your photos all on the disc at the end of the day. So if anyone has used it, please do get in touch. Drop us an email and perhaps have a little bit of a discussion with me, see if we can help out Stephen a bit further about the PhotoPass Plus.
In other words, Kirsty, if you've been, can you let Michelle know so she can tell Stephen? No, I'm only joking. Yeah.
Do you know what? Our last show was listened to by, do you know, an amazing number of people. We are really, really proud of the fact that our show is growing.
Yeah.
And we're attracting more listeners. And it's all down to you guys. So thank you ever so much. And please do keep listening. Interact with us. Yes. You know, we're not that scary. Hopefully you can understand us from being up north.
I mean, don't get me wrong. We love Kirsty and Stephen to bits. But we'd love to hear from some new listeners. You know, send us your feedback. Send us your emails. You know, send us a review on a ride if you want, or a review on a restaurant. Me and Michelle, we love hearing from people that listen to the show, so please do get in touch.
Yeah, right. What shall we do first then? Shall we go on and have a little bit of a rant about the Disney store, or shall we go to Kathy's interview?
Entirely up to you. Usually, we do the interview first.
Oh, go on then. We'll go over and speak with Kathy, and then we'll come back to the Disney store then.
Super.
Well, everyone, we are proud to continue our regularly scheduled show.
In this episode's feature, we are joined by Kathleen Kelly. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Michelle. Hi, Kim.
And Kathy has come, and she is going to help us talk through what assistance is available for the Disney World guest who may have a medical condition or physical impairment to ensure they have a magical day. Whether you use a wheelchair, have a hearing or vision impairment, require a special diet, have autism spectrum disorder or ADHD, or even are a person of large size, tall, short, or travel with service animal, and if necessary, help is available to ensure you can get the most out of your trip.
As Kim's just said, we have Kathy with us this evening to talk us through, help us understand what assistance there is, share some knowledge. Can you just tell us a little bit about your background and why we've chosen you to join us on this podcast, Kathy?
Oh, I'd be happy to. Well, the number one qualification is I'm a huge Walt Disney World fan. Our family made our first trip in 2003, and we've pretty much gone every year since. The reason why Walt Disney World is the best vacation choice for our family is that we have a child with autism. He has, on the spectrum, he's more severe. He has classic autism. And because of that, has a lot of issues with sensory and behavior communication. And Walt Disney World is by far the most accommodating place that we have ever traveled. We've been to the beach. We've been to other amusement parks. We've done other types of family vacations. And really, Walt Disney World is the best place for him. And lastly, I'm a registered nurse for 27 years. So I do have a certain amount of medical background and experience. And so though my personal experience is with autism, I certainly do have a lot of hands-on experience with mobility issues and the like.
Fantastic. How old is your son?
He's 14 now. He was 5 when we first visited. So our trips have certainly changed.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I know my son, he's got autism, although he's at the other end of the spectrum going towards Asperger's side. But he also has ADHD, which is medicated. So I've got sort of a little bit of a personal insight what it's like from coming from the UK and getting the medication into the States, because it's a controlled drug. So it's quite of a challenge. So hopefully between us two, we can share some of our knowledge with Kim and our listeners. And maybe I think the best place to start is with some pre-trip planning.
Yes.
So your first trip with your son, he was 5. Did you particularly do much planning, or did you just go, or talk us through that first trip?
I did do a lot of planning, although I have to say I am a planner by nature when it comes to vacations. So I like to know what I'm getting into. At the time, this was before I was really involved with anything on the internet. I didn't even use a PC. So my planning back then, 2003, this was primarily through the guidebooks, and had a lot of information in the unofficial guide. And my favorite, my go-to resource has been the Passporter, Walt Disney World planning books. And they came out with a version called Open Mouse by Deb Wills and Deb Martin Coma. And it's a book that I've recommended for years.
So you've used books. Is there any particular podcasts you personally have found of use to you?
Well, for trip planning, not necessarily. I listen to many podcasts just for information and for entertainment. Perhaps Be Our Guest podcast is a good one for trip planning. I'm a huge fan of Lou Mangiello and the WDW radio show. So, and I've actually become very interested lately in podcasts. But my first foray into the online Disney community was Disboards. The WDW info, disboards.com, is a huge online forum for Disney. And they have a lot of forums, a lot of threads in their trip planning section. They have everything there, really.
So I think I even emailed the Disney Mums panel and had a question on there, because quite a big section on special needs. It's quite an interesting resource.
There are several of the Disney Moms who are parents of special needs children. Let's not forget the official site, you know, Disney World, disney.go.com/guests-with-disabilities. And there is all of the official information. They break it down into basic sections: mobility, hearing, vision, service animals. There's also a section on, if you're going to be staying on property, if you're going to be staying at a Disney resort, how to make your special reservations. And this is something that's very important. I've often read people who have been to Disney, who had disabilities, who had a negative experience But all you have to do is a little bit of investigation, a little bit of research, and even just listening to a show like this where we're just getting it out there, just getting the information out there. You always have to be your own advocate. Just because a company or a place is known to be accessible doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to read your mind. You know, you have to be able to articulate and communicate exactly what your needs are and what sort of accommodation you need. And I think that's a big reason why there's such a big confusion and miscommunication about the guest assistance card.
Exactly, which we're going to come on to in a few moments to talk about everything to do with that. But
absolutely,
as you say, Disney website has all the height restrictions, it has weight restrictions, it gives you all sorts of information, and these are standard things. I think before you go, even if you've got no special needs, you need to look into if you're going, say, with children, or if you're pregnant, or, you know, to find out what is advisable for you and your group to actually consider riding on as well. For me, when I was planning for my son, this is only like 3 years ago, we showed him YouTube videos of ride-throughs on some of the ones that I thought he might have had issues with. I didn't want to do them on every single one because it takes away the magic, but ones we thought he might have had an issue with, we showed him, and we looked on Google Earth to show where everything was. We went on YouTube and looked at videos people have done around the parks just to familiarise himself and prepare him, because to some children or adults with autism, a 5 foot something character in a fursuit is going to scare them to death.
Sure. Oh, it took him, I don't think he warmed up to the non-face characters until he was at least 7, although we could say that about many young children, to be honest. It doesn't necessarily have to be a child with a developmental disability. For some reason, and if you're not sure about that, it's nice to ease the child into the character interaction by starting with the face characters. By that, I mean the ones that don't have masks or coverings over their head. The princesses, for example.
Yeah.
Because they're more human and they're more human sized. You know, Goofy's a little bit intimidating. He's pretty big, you know. So, but yes, many children with autism, and again, when we're talking about any kind of differently abled person or any sort of medical condition, you know, it's important to recognize that it's not a one size fits all label. Your child who's on the autism spectrum is going to be very, very different from mine. Or one person who needs a wheelchair for mobility will be extremely, need a completely different accommodation than the next. It's like a buffet, these disabilities, particularly autism, because it's a spectrum disorder. It's like going to Chef Mickey's. You can have 4 people at the table and they all go up to the buffet and then they all come back. Well, it's the same buffet, but each one of the plates is going to look different. So not every person with autism or cerebral palsy or asthma or whatever has the same needs. And that is why it's very difficult sometimes to plan the trips, because it's not always out there in a set recipe on some website or some book, you know, that you can say, yes, okay, this is how you help a child with autism experience Disney. Because, you know, again, your son is very different from mine. And my son at 5 was completely different from my son at 14.
True.
Totally different trips. So you sort of have to be prepared to flex it a little bit. And try to involve the child. Obviously, if it's an adult, they're going to be involved, but involve the child. I tended to be guilty of this when I was, when he was younger, plan the trip. I'm the planner. I'm the one in the family. I like to make all the reservations and the ADRs, and I set up the itinerary and I do everything. And it's so important, as you said, Michelle, to involve the child in it by letting them watch the YouTube videos, the planning videos, even the official, oh my gosh, if I had seen that official planning DVD once, I had seen it 100 times, just over and over and over and over and over. Because most children with autism are very visual. They like to see it, you know. That's how they interact best is more through seeing something than just telling them, okay, now remember on Splash Mountain, you're going to get wet. You know, if they actually see the video of the splash, you know, then it resonates with them and they can understand. I definitely agree with the YouTube, and the fireworks too. You can watch wishes and illuminations. And I find that having them experience that without the big firework, boom, 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 you know, all of that, they're a little bit more inclined to accept, you know, when there actually is the actual fireworks show. We've always used those little squishy ear plugs, you know, the little foam ones.
Yeah.
Some people use headphones just to sort of dull the, and not just for kids with autism. I mean, any young child who has an issue with the loud noises and the loud fireworks. I even use the squishy earplugs if we go on Dinosaur, because I find Dinosaur, that ride is so loud. It just, but I take the earplugs and I put them in my ears and now I can enjoy it other than being thrown around and bashed about, you know, but.
Right. Well, I'm just going to start on the UK point of view, because obviously, you know, quite a decent 9-10 hours flight over.
Oh, yes.
One tip that I absolutely think worked really, really well for my son is we made up a little card, like a business card, and it had text on it saying what Kieran might do differently from another child of his age. Basically, he put on, I think it worded something like, "Don't expect me to look at you in the face when I'm talking. I am listening to you. I just find it challenging. When you're giving me instructions, break it down into small chunks so I can process it." And he called it his Kieran card, and it had, you know, very specific information that he wanted to put on his card. And he gave this to the stewardess when he got on the plane, and she must have shuttled off and got the chief stewardess, and she came and introduced herself, and it made him a lot less agitated on that flight. It really did, because she knew certain things would trigger him because of this card. So she came and prepared him and just gave him a little bit of extra attention in a way to make him feel more at ease, because it is a stressful thing for a child. And especially if on top of that, you've got all these conditions. So that's one thing I would highly recommend. Obviously, things to entertain the child on the flight, all of that. But another thing we have to do with Kieran is meditation. Like when we go to security in the UK, we've got to declare that. So we have to go down the red aisle, which we've got to take out the doctor's letter. And, you know, the doctor's made up a letter for him saying how many tablets he's taking out of the country and how many it's for. And we just have all that in our hand luggage, which is the advice we got from the US consulate in London, just to do that, to be on the safe side, because he does take something called methylphenidate, which is a controlled drug. So, you know, obviously if you are travelling with any medication at all, whether it's just for asthma or heart medication or for diabetes, you have to take something to back up the medication you're taking out of the country, you know, copy of your prescription side or a letter from the GP, just to ease yourself through customs, I think, as well. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yes. And certainly to keep your medications in their original bottles. Yeah. Sometimes people like the little pill boxes and they have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and they think, oh, this is great. I'm going for 2 weeks and here's a 2 week pill box. I'll just put everything in the boxes ahead of time. No, bring the box with you by all means, but don't put them in the pill box until you get to your destination, because all medications should be kept in their original containers.
Hmm. Also helps as well if you lose some medication while you're abroad, you've got the doctor's letter with you, and yes, it's easier to go to a physician in the States and say, look, this is what I'm prescribed. I've had my bag stolen, lost all my medication. I really do need this. He's got it all written down for him. So, you know, I always take a copy of my medications with me in my hand luggage. I also have another photostated copy in my suitcase so that if my hand luggage goes missing, I've always got it in my suitcase as well. Let's move on to the guest assistance card. Firstly, what is it?
Well, the guest assistance card is made really as a communication system for you to be able to communicate with the many, many, many cast members that you're going to encounter when you are entering into attractions. You can, if you need certain specific accommodations, and again, remember that buffet, not everyone is going to need the same accommodation or the same card. It isn't just one standard card. And something that we have to get right out there, right, because I still see it sometimes described as a front of the line pass. And it is not front of the line pass. And again, depending upon your need, it's a card for you and your party. I believe the limit is six to present to the attraction cast member to show them if perhaps you need an auxiliary entrance or if you need, for example, some children, small children with disabilities, it helps them to stay in a stroller, even if they're past the usual stroller age. And in this case, we say they're using the stroller as a wheelchair. Okay. Or perhaps the child has Down syndrome or muscular dystrophy. And maybe they're not in a wheelchair per se, but they do get fatigued. They do get very tired and they need to sit in their stroller. And you can, you know, if you're planning to use your stroller as a wheelchair, well, it's not obvious to the cast member when you wheel up to the entrance that you're planning to use this and you want to have the child stay in the stroller, because normally they have the strollers, they take the children out of the strollers and they park them on the side. In this case, if you're using your stroller as a wheelchair, you can remain in the stroller, the child can remain in the stroller, and you can just use it up until the time that you transfer to the ride vehicle. So again, it all depends on what the need is. My sister has a child who has a medical condition and requires certain medications that make the child extremely sensitive to sunlight. She's not to stay in bright sunlight. So she got a guest assistance card just on the offside chance that if there was any attraction queue that was uncovered or out in the sun, that she could go to a different entrance where she wouldn't be out in the sun. But, you know, so that was a guest assistance card for a very, you talk about niche, that's a niche within a niche. I mean, just a very specific thing that you may not even need that on most of the attractions, but on the one attraction that you may, how about when you're waiting outside for Festival of the Lion King, when you're waiting for the doors to open, you know, it's outside and it's sometimes directly in the sun. So a guest assistance card to show it to the cast member would just, you know, have you go off into another shaded area or something like that. But getting back to the original, you go to the guest services, which is in the front of each park, the four parks. It's not available at the water parks. It's not available at Downtown Disney. It's only at the four parks. You go to guest services with the individual who needs the accommodation and you speak to one of the cast members there and explain exactly what it is. What's the accommodation that you're looking for? And then they will issue you a guest assistance card based upon what you need. You are not required to have a doctor's note, and that's against Americans with Disabilities Act. You don't have to prove per se that you have this disability, which I think is wherein a lot of the shenanigans comes in with people who use the guest assistance card inappropriately. But you do need to be able to verbalize. Now, some people feel more comfortable bringing a doctor's note, and that's fine. The first time that we went, we did bring a note from his pediatrician. They barely glanced at it. But then again, just him standing there with his behaviors, flapping his arms and simming and making all sorts of, you know, it was fairly obvious that he had some issues. But for many people, their disability is silent, or it's just not immediately noticeable. One in particular that I'm thinking of is someone was telling me a friend of theirs had difficulty with her eyesight adjusting from going from the bright, bright sunlight into darkness, you know, very quickly. It would make her really like temporarily blind, and it would upset her equilibrium and her balance, and it would cause her, more of a chance of falling. So her guest assistance card, even though she wasn't visually impaired per se, she had the guest assistance card so that she could enter in a different way if it's available. Oh. You have to remember, not every attraction has the accommodation that you might need. That's why it's important to know the attractions ahead of time, whether it's through the books or the online or so, because, you know, I think when it comes to the law, accessibility is to make a reasonable accommodation. And sometimes there are people who have such specific needs that it just isn't reasonably accommodated, but they will always, the cast members will always try to do the best that they can. However, that said, a lot of the cast members, it seems that not all of the cast members have the same level of knowledge with the guest assistance card. Some of them are very experienced with it and others are not. And it, let's face it, in the summer, there's a lot of additional summer help. There's college program, you know, kids coming in, and they may not have as much experience, you know. So if you ever experience any kind of a question about whether or not your special needs traveler should have a guest assistance card, or on a particular attraction, if they can honor the guest assistance card, you can always ask to speak to one of the supervisors, and they should be able to help you and to ease any sort of miscommunication. If you're in a wheelchair, you don't need a guest assistance card, because obviously you're in a wheelchair, so you go through the wheelchair queue. There it is. It's pretty self-evident that you have a mobility issue. However, friends of mine who use a wheelchair, they'll still be asked for guest assistance cards when they come to the attraction. And they'll have to explain, no, we don't need a guest assistance card. Here he is in the chair. This is it. You know, he doesn't need the guest assistance card. Oh, yes, he does. And, you know, sometimes there is a little bit of miscommunication. So don't fret. Don't get upset about it. It's, you know, Disney is wonderful, but Disney is staffed by human beings, and, you know, human beings sometimes make mistakes. You can always ask to speak politely, ask to speak to a supervisor, and you know, explain your need, and more than likely they will be able to accommodate you.
Hmm. So this is just, if I remember rightly from when we used it, it's a couple of years, the cards themselves are a basic sort of 3.5-inch by 5-inch card, and the cast member writes on the specific need of the individual that receives the card. That's right,
yes.
Isn't it?
Okay. Yes. For example, someone who has visual impairment, they will use a guest assistance card so that they can sit in the front of the theater so that they can see. I mean, obviously. So their need is going to be different than my son with autism. It's pretty specific in terms of what it is, which is why you have to be ready to say. You can't just say, yes, I'm here with grandma and grandma's old. She needs a guest assistance card. Well, you know, you have to be more specific than that. And you have to be realistic, because let's face it, we're all special. We all think we're special. Everybody's special. And, you know, and we are. But, you know, the guest assistance card is designed for guests who truly have the need for an accommodation, a physical accommodation. And it's free, obviously. You don't pay any extra for it. It's just something that is provided, as a service to guests. And yes, there are some unscrupulous people that have obtained the guest assistance card and even try to tell other people that they should try to get the guest assistance card. And that's between them and their maker. You know, they know that they're not doing the right thing, but, and there's been some talk in the community about, oh, you can't do that because they'll take away the guest assistance card. And then the people that really need it, let's face it, they're never going to take away the guest assistance card. It's required by law here in our country that you have to provide reasonable, that's the key, reasonable accommodation for people with disabilities. When we first got it, my husband felt very, very shy about using it. He did not want to use it because he felt that he was somehow cheating the guest assistance card, the particular one that we use for my son, because, you know, he had a lot of sensory sensitivities and he makes a lot of noise and he gets very kind of agitated and flaps his hands around and makes a lot of sounds. So quite honestly, standing in a long queue, if it's difficult for us, it's probably 10 times difficult for the people that are standing around us. Yeah. Because we're used to him. Those people, poor people, they're not used to this, you know, and it would be hard on them too and stressful. So I remember the first time we ever used the guest assistance card. But getting back to the story, we arrived at Disney kind of late in the afternoon, checked into our resort. And of course, the kids were chomping at the bit. They wanted to go to the Magic Kingdom. Well, it was a Saturday. This was before I really knew what I was doing and thinking, oh God, Magic Kingdom on a Saturday, you know. But we went. And of course, it was packed. It was jammed. It was crowded and everything. I thought, oh gosh, we had a bite to eat. And then we made our way over to Frontierland and they wanted to do Big Thunder Mountain. And of course, by now, fast passes it was the late afternoon. So getting a fast pass wasn't feasible. And the line in the standby was extremely long. So I said to my husband, well, this is a time that we can use the guest assistance card. And he said, no, we don't need that. I don't know, honey, that line is awfully long. And, you know, remember, this is our first trip. Yeah, we got on the back of the standby line. And I said, I don't know, it says 45 minutes. That's going to be an awful long wait for him. 20 minutes later, we were stepping out of the line because he couldn't take it. He couldn't take it. And he was screeching and making noise and flapping and getting so agitated from not just the wait, but just the crush of people all around. You know how that queue goes ziggy, yeah, zaggy, ziggy, zaggy. And there's a crowd of people and the noise and the humanity crushing in on you. And he just sensory wise just couldn't take it. I mean, come on. Nobody likes to wait in a line. Especially children, and children have a hard time, all children. But, you know, children who are on the autism spectrum or who have ADHD or, you know, any other sort of issues that affect them, sensory things affect them physically. So it's difficult to explain, but a child who is being bombarded with all of this extra sensation, they're experiencing physical pain. They're not just misbehaving. They're not just throwing a tantrum because they're impatient and they want to go on the ride. They're acting out because they are physically feeling discomfort and pain. So we had to leave. And of course, you know, it was one of these, I told you so kind of things, but you know, he just said, okay. Now I see. So we had to learn the hard way that yes, in certain instances, the guest assistance card is the best, because if we had shown the guest assistance card, they would have directed us to the fast pass queue, even though we did not have a fast pass. Mm. So we're still waiting on a queue, but it's a much shorter queue. Mm. It was maybe a 15-minute queue instead of the 45-minute queue. And that is what makes it very, very helpful for your child. Because quite frankly, the normal way that one will go about getting fast passes, you typically have to split up your family and send one person running for the fast passes and the other person has to stay with the kid. It can be a little disruptive to the family. And not every family has just one child who has, or one adult who has some sort of a disability. Or they may not be two adults. What if you're a single parent and you're the only adult and you're there with the children? Well, you can't go run for the fast passes because you're the only adult. And if Disney is offering this accommodation to you, your family member, then I say, take it.
We, from experience with Kieran, when we'd get to the attraction we wanted to do and we'd do an assessment if we thought the queue wasn't too bad, i.e. under 30 minutes, we'd have a go with him to see if he could manage. Sometimes we had to leave the queue, as you did there with Big Thunder Mountain. Sometimes it was okay. However, if it was for the really big long lines, like 40 minutes plus, he just wouldn't have coped. You know, he just finds it far too challenging. So then we go. Some of the rides sort of said, go down to the fast pass line, or I'll pop you in next. Or sometimes I just sort of go and say, look, we want to ride this in about half an hour. He's going to go for a toilet break and a drink. Can we come back, go on the ride, come back? And a lot of the time we was told, yeah, that's fine, because he would have done his waiting in line, but he's not physically able to, so we just took him to another place. It worked for us that way. We've also had a listener who has emailed me a little bit about her experience with her guest assistance card, which I'll just share with you now. It's from the lovely Rebecca Mannion. Well, with my cystic fibrosis, it depends if I've been ill or not. On her last visit, I had been to hospital for a month and had side effects of tablets, and now have got diabetes. That was the first time I used the guest assistance pass. It was a massive help because I do get tired, use more energy more quickly. The cast members always ask if I can manage and use stairs if needed, and I always answer honestly. Sometimes I'll manage, sometimes I won't. I have used a wheelchair once for a day and a half because I'd gotten unwell on holiday. I hated using it, but I wanted to carry on with the holiday, so it was the only option. Again, cast members were very helpful. On my next trip in August, I should be okay this time, but I haven't been exercising, which means I have not built up a high exercise level, and that's when I know I will struggle. So I will be getting the pass for this holiday too, mainly for the long queues where it is over an hour, and I know I will be standing with no option of seating, so I'm going to have to use it. For shorter queues, I just use the standard line. The shows, I didn't use it at all, because I felt others would have needed the assistance more than I. We make sure we take plenty of rest, drink plenty of water and snack, pace myself. I don't rush everywhere. And once when I was in Paris, I had such little time, I raced around and I ended up being really ill. Rebecca put some very wise advice there. If you are travelling with someone who needs additional assistance, plan in more break times and more quiet zones. There's always a place in the parks you can find that's a little bit quiet, and it just means you're going to have to go back to that planning and make sure you know where these places are, because you can find the information, it's out there. So what do you think to that, Kathy?
Oh, well, absolutely. And I think that sometimes it is more difficult for the person who is not used to using a wheelchair daily. I mean, there are some people who are wheelchair users on a daily basis. I find it can be very difficult for someone who is planning this very physically demanding holiday. There is a lot of walking, there is a lot of standing, and sometimes it's necessary to use something to assist, such as renting the scooter or the ECV. A lot of people don't use a scooter in their daily life, but they should. It's appropriate for them to rent one when they're down at Walt Disney World. And also, it's very important to realize that, it's okay that you're actually helping yourself by doing these things, such as, you know, renting a wheelchair. You know, in the parks, they have daily rentals. And that's important to know because, first of all, it's important to know that when you're going to rent a scooter or a wheelchair in the parks, you can't take it from park to park. They'll give you a voucher, for example, if you're going to hop from Magic Kingdom in the morning and then later you're going to go to your resort for a break and then in the evening you're going to go to Epcot. They'll give you a voucher, but you have to turn in that wheelchair or scooter when you leave the park. It's important to know that if you are going to require a mobility assistance device at your resort or when you're transferring, on the Disney transportation system from place to place, you should rent one of your own, Penn. The ones in the parks are just for short term, the ones you rent from wherever. Scoot Orlando or Buena Vista Scooters. There's a lot of them. All you have to do is do a search. You'll find many, many places that will deliver it right to your resort. Or even if you're not staying on property, you know, if you're staying off property, they'll deliver it to where you need it. And then you'll have it for the duration. The other thing about the scooter and wheelchair rentals in the park is that they are on first come, first serve basis. A lot of people who have mobility issues, they have a hard time getting going in the morning, and it may not be possible for them to be there at rope drop, you know, and think, oh gosh, what if I get there and they're all out of scooters, they're all out of wheelchairs? You know, it's stress, and you don't want stress on your vacation. So if you really, really need a wheelchair or a scooter, it's my recommendation, sorry, Disney, that you go and you rent that in another off-site location. Not everything is as the eye beholds. And I mean, not every person at Walt Disney World is nice. Not everyone is pleasant. And especially if you are at the end of the long day and you're waiting for your bus, and everyone is tired and everyone is grouchy, you're not exactly seeing humanity at their best. And some people are very intolerant of others, particularly if they feel that this person is somehow using their disability to their advantage. And, you know, God bless them, but, you know, they don't know what it's like to live day in and day out with a disability or with a child who has a disability, and so be it. So to hear other people make nasty comments like that, it makes my blood boil, because, you know, until you have walked in their steps, or in this case, until you have scooted in their scoot, just take a moment and stop and think that it may not be what it appears, you know. This person obviously needs this for some reason that is not necessarily evident, you know. Sure. You know, that's my little soapbox thing is, you know, before you know, start to make a snarky comment about fat people on scooters, you know, there could be more going on there than, and you know what? And you know what? Even if they are obese, and because of their obesity, that is why they cannot tolerate they have problems with their endurance, you know, they have problems. I mean, then, you know, it is what it is. They're using the scooter so that they can enjoy Disney. I see somebody like that and I say, isn't it wonderful that that person is out here and they're not just staying at home and isolating themselves, and that they're having a good time with their family, and they're out in the world, which is what they should be doing, you know? So, it's important to just, take a moment and think that, you know, not all disabilities are visible. Off the soapbox now.
Okay. No, I totally agree with that. You know, don't judge others. You don't know what's going on with them at all. So I definitely think that is a very important mantra to live your life by. So, wow, we've just discussed so much already. There was other things I wanted to discuss with you, but looking at the time, wow, I don't think we're going to be able to fit it in. But perhaps if our listeners have got anything further that they want to add to this, perhaps they could drop us an email and it's something we could get back to in a future show. I do know though, Kathy, a little bird tells me you're working on a little project of your own. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, yes. Thank you so much, Michelle. I actually, Mini Minxes, this is going to be my official debut announcement that I have a podcast that I'm starting. I hope to be releasing shows in about a week or so. I have had a little bit of surprise technical issues, but surprise, but I'm hard at work on this. It's a Special Mouse podcast. You can access it at specialmouse.com, and it will be available on iTunes and Zoom and BlackBerry and all of those good things. And it is going to be a Disney podcast that is completely about the types of things that we've been discussing today, all different types of special needs, medical issues, and concerns. at Disney, and not just Walt Disney World, but Disneyland, the Disney Cruise Line. Hopefully I have a friend. She's another autism parent. She goes to Disneyland Paris. I'm hoping to have her on to talk a little bit about Disneyland Paris. So really, it's going to be Disney parks and travel for people with all kinds of special needs, whether it be the types of things we were discussing today or even special diets and food allergies. And like you had mentioned earlier, pregnancy, you know, these are things that we think are just normal, healthy parts of life. But let's face it, going to a Disney park when you are pregnant, you have a whole host of issues and concerns, whether it's and it'll impact your planning and also your touring. Really, I find that this is just an area that has been a little bit, it's a population that's been a little bit underserved. To get these subjects out there and to be talking about it. The segment of the show that I'm most excited about is called Your Special Trip Report, because I love trip reports. I find that even more so than just hearing people just blah, 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 talk about, you know, call this number for whatever, whatever, and go stop here at this desk and get that car. It's so much more real, so much more helpful to hear a real person talking about their real experience with their real special needs. And it's fun, because who doesn't love to hear a story? Sure. And when you're a Disney fan, who doesn't love to hear a Disney story and hear all about someone's Disney trip? And I find when I'm reading trip reports on forums, you can really cull some very interesting and helpful bits of information, such wonderful tips and tidbits from talking with people just about what they experienced very recently at the Disney parks. So I'm very excited about it, and I certainly hope that you'll listen and perhaps come on as a guest, Michelle.
Sounds exciting, and that would be absolutely wonderful. Thank you. You'll have to let us know when it's going to hit iTunes, and make sure we download and give you some feedback, and if we can be involved further, that would be absolutely wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I am tweeting. So it's a Special Mouse Pod. At Special Mouse Pod is on Twitter. And I have a page on Facebook for Special Mouse Podcast to have some good content out there very soon.
Super. Well, we'll add all these things to our show notes that we put on our Facebook notes page anyway. All these phone numbers we've mentioned and websites and links to finding yourself, etc., so that people can get in touch with you, follow you on Twitter, find out more about your podcast as well. So that's absolutely fantastic.
Thank you so much.
I just want to say a big thank you for coming on and chatting away with us. Didn't get quite onto everything else we wanted to cover, that we'll have to do for another time. But thank you ever so much, and hope to speak to you again really soon.
Have a very good night. Thank you again. Michelle, Kim.
Thank you. You're great.
Girl power.
Right, so who's ready for a fight?
Oh, gosh, get your handbags out at dawn. We're not having a fight, Kim.
No, we are going to spend the next 20 minutes or so discussing what our opinions are on the state of the Disney stores in the UK. And this was a subject, I think, close to both mine and Michelle's hearts, because we are both Disney geeks. We both like spending all our money on Disney merchandise.
True.
And, well, I am happy.
Well, I must admit, I'm finding it a little bit tricky spending my hard-earned pennies down at that Disney store, because there's not a lot in it for me at the moment.
Not a lot in it for anyone over the age of 10 in it at the moment.
Oh, she started already. Come on, let's get some structure to this, okay?
Yes, boss.
Okay. Firstly, the Disney Store in the UK range in size, number one, okay? The big store in London, Bond Street, has been revamped. It is now a lovely two-storey interactive store. I've had a personal tour with a group of Walt Disney fans that had a WDW Radio UK meet in London last year. And we were toured around the store, and some of the highlights of the store were shown to us. And it was amazing, the detail that had gone into the store.
Bet that took 2 minutes.
It did take quite a while, because they have this magic mirror, and if you wave a wand in front of it, it shows you true love, and lots of little quotes on the walls, and flying characters around the top of the walls as well. And obviously the product range in that store is a lot bigger. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yeah.
It stocks a wide range of vinyl merch, and it stocks London exclusives. It stocks Disney Couture. It also has loads of stuff for the little people as well. You know, the range of plushies they have is unbelievable. Even goes down to the toiletries and the smelly on the Tinkerbell range. And there's some life-size plushies that you can go and have your picture with. So it's an amazing store. But not everybody lives in London. You know, my nearest store is about 14 miles away, and it's not a particularly big store, is it, Kim? Because I know it's your local store as well.
Yes, it is my local store in the absolutely horrendous White Rose Centre in Leeds. Which, as you can tell, the White Rose Centre isn't my most favourite place anyway. The store is small, which is fair enough. We all can't have these big fancy dancy stores like the one in London.
True.
The one in London sounds fantastic.
It's brill.
But compared to the other stores that I've visited, and alright, I've not visited loads. There's the one in the White Rose Shopping Centre in Leeds. There's the one in the Trafford Centre I've been to. There's the one in the Birmingham Bullring I've been to. well, they're just all full of toys. Which, you might be sitting there thinking, well, Kim, Disney is a kid's product. And I'm going to come back at you and I'm going to say, yes, fair enough, Disney is a kid's product. However, there are people out there who are fans of Disney that don't necessarily have kids. There are people out there who are fans of Disney that do have kids but would like a t-shirt that would fit them rather than one that's for a 12-year-old. Now, if this isn't such a big problem in America, where you can get t-shirts up to 5XL, why is it such an issue in the United Kingdom, where the Disney stores cannot, A, have clothes above a size 16, and it's very rarely that they even have sizes 16 in them stores, why all of a sudden the snow globes have been completely withdrawn from the smaller stores? And have they been withdrawn from the one in the Trafford Centre, Michelle? I can't recall ever seeing them in there anymore.
I personally can't recall, no.
Whereas my local store used to have a humongous display of snow globes. Alright, maybe they didn't sell one every day because they were quite expensive. But it was always sort of like a tradition where, you know, you'd go in and you'd have a look and you'd, you know, look at the snow globes. You couldn't pick them up, but you'd look at them and admire them and, you know, point out to your other half, oh, I quite like that one, oh, I quite like that one. And, you know, and I do have 3 or 4 of them that, you know, luckily Aaron's taken the hint and he's bought me them. I can't go into the Disney store anymore. Yes, I can order them online, but what about if one Saturday morning I want one right there, right then?
True. You see, the problem I imagine would be is that Disney have, obviously, a massive stock range of everything they do. You know, boys' things, girls' things, baby things, adult things, character-related things, toys, homeware, clothing, accessories, movies, music, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. They cannot physically fit it into every single store. So I imagine what they will do is, in a particular range of stores, stock particular items that are good sellers. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem that myself and you have is that, well, we would like to go to a local store, be able to pick something up for us, spending our money, and it's not going to be there because the big sellers are going to be for the little princesses and the little pirates, because that's where parents will take the kids and they will buy the stuff. There's more of them than there are of us adult fans, I imagine.
Well, no, I understand that and I get that. But they used to stock snow globes. They used to stock household items. I've lived in my house now with my husband for about 6 years. And about 6 months before we moved out, Disney had a houseware sale. I bought the cutlery, I bought the plates, I bought the teapots, I bought, you know, the tea towels, you know. Can I get them now? No. So if I smash my Mickey Mouse plate, I can't go replace it.
No, you can't smash it. You didn't.
Unless I want a gigantic great big cereal bowl, which is pretty much useless. Because that seems to be the only kind of homeware that they are willing to sell, is cereal bowls and mugs.
Oh.
And I get your point. All right, they can't stock everything. This is why they have an online website. So why can't I then order what I want online and have it delivered to the store so I'm not paying an extortionate amount of delivery charge, which, all right, £7.95 might not sound a lot to some people. I think it's a pretty damn expensive delivery charge myself when you've got the likes of Amazon that do free delivery, you've got Play.com that does free delivery, you've got, you know, other websites that do free delivery, yet Disney will charge me £8.
True, Marks and Spencer's do that. If you order something online, you can get it delivered to a local store for free. What? I imagine distribution-wise, that might be a bit of a nightmare for Disney. I don't know. I don't know what their framework is like, where their big warehouses, etc. are.
Well, why don't you know, Michelle?
Well, I've tried to get answers from Disney. Do you know, finding out or contacting Disney is impossible. Yeah. I have been emailing and emailing, and I'm not getting very far. But don't worry, I will get onto it, and I will get some answers.
But that to me, don't you think, is a good compromise? All right, Kim, you can't have your snow globes, you can't have your homeware in the stores anymore, but you order what you want online and have it delivered direct to the store free of charge. Let's not pay £8 to have a box delivered by Yodel that might get there or might not get there. Because let's face it, Yodel and Disney, the delivery service is shocking.
See, I've not had a problem with Yodel before. They've always texted me to say when they're coming. They've always been on time.
No. Nope.
Not a problem.
Yodel are rubbish. And there'll be people, hopefully, that are listening to this that I know also have had problems in, say, like in the Vinylmation group where the box gets lost. They're going to deliver it one day. Oh, no, we can't deliver it this day. We'll deliver it the next day. Don't turn up. They have to chase it again. Oh, well, we haven't got it anymore. You know, nightmares like that, and it's just like, well, they don't care. It's like they don't care. That's the impression I'm getting, and maybe that's just me being a sourpuss with no kids. But I don't want to go in the Disney store and see 20 different princess dresses and 5 different pirate prince outfits and plastic swords and plastic dolls, you know. Let's talk about Vinylmation.
Oh.
Nobody in any Disney store anywhere, as far as I know, who works there, really knows what a Vinylmation is. They don't know how to describe what they are. They don't know when they're getting new stocking. You ask them when a latest release is coming down, they look at you like you're an idiot. The smaller stores don't even sell the Vinylmation, so me and Michelle have to go an hour out of our way to our next nearest store to hopefully get Vinylmation. That's if not some bugger's gone and bought them all.
Oh, heavens. You're not a happy bunny, are you, Kimmy?
Well, no, but even the stores that do stock Vinylmation don't stock them correctly. They don't display them correctly.
I will agree with you on that. The number of times I've been looking for Vinylmation and they're hidden on a low shelf near the cash till, or you have to actually go around and look on every single display cabinet and you'll find them tucked away. And then you ask the cast members about them and it's like, oh, do you collect them? I said, yeah, when you're getting such and such release. Oh, I'll have to check, and oh, I'm not quite sure, and oh. And then some of them have been opened because there's no big presence about explaining about vinyl mations that, you know, some of them, you don't know what you get until you've opened up the box, but that's what we discussed when we had Jim Valeri on, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was. And it's like, here's a story, me and Michelle. Michelle's in London. I get wind of, oh, there's Light Up Mickey's appearing in shops. So I text Michelle and say, get you sent to London stores. Light Up Mickey's are in stores for some reason. We don't know why, but people are buying them. See if you can get us a couple. And then what happens, Michelle?
I went to one store and they said, oh, no, they're not released. That was the Bond Street, the big one. Then I went over to Covent Garden, and Covent Garden had filled up the shelf with them. But then 2 days later, they'd taken them off the shelves because they weren't supposed to be selling them yet.
They were supposed to be presents for cast members, weren't they, that worked in the store?
Well, I managed to get them for all my lovely Disney friends.
So, you know, it's stuff like that, it makes you angry. Well, it makes me angry, should I say. Vinyl Mations must be popular because you think of the releases that have come online in the UK and they're only on sale for a few days before they're sold out.
Well, true. I think we need to do a little bit of a campaign on the Disney Facebook group, because one thing I've noticed about that group is that Disney do respond. I've posted on there before about their product range, and, you know, they've advised things are going to improve. And I have started to see a bit of an improvement, Kim, I must say, because the online store particularly is now selling Dooney and Burke bags in the UK, which they weren't doing a while back. You know, if you wanted Dooney and Burke, you had to, you know, go to an overseas park. Admittedly, the Dooney and Burke bags are a lot more expensive here than they are in the USA, but that's not down really to Disney. It's down to the fact that we pay higher VAT and sales tax, etc., on our products. I am starting to see, you know, hope, light at the end of the tunnel, that there is the range out there on the website, but as you say, they might need to just tweak what they're offering. Now, I'm looking here at the moment on the Disney store. They've got an offer on, as they occasionally do. You know, we have to look out for those codes. Sometimes it'll be 10% off, 15%. We've even had 25% off recently on the Disney Store website. They're doing an offer at the moment for delivery for $3.50, which isn't so bad, is it?
Well, yeah, all right, $3.50. It's better than $7.95, but I still want to know why I can't have my stuff delivered to the store free of charge.
Okay, well, let's spin it round. If we hop over the ocean and go to Disney Store in the USA, me and you know standard shipping to the UK is $34.50.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yep.
Once you spend over, I think it's $15, you know you're going to get hit by customs on the way in. And that's going to be your handling charge, which I think's, what, £14-15?
Yeah.
And then you've got your tax, your import tax on top of that. So if I wanted to order, and I know we did this recently between me and you, we ordered a few Vinyl Mations, and it ended up I had a shipping cost of $74.50, and then import tax, customs charge, I think it was about £18-19, something mm-hmm. ridiculous like that. So it sort of lessened the saving we had,
yeah.
And it lessened the experience a little bit. Because obviously the Disney store in the US now no longer offers their free shipping order offer to the UK anymore. So I do think, you know, we've got to bear that something in mind, that with the US store, the more you order, the higher the shipping gets until the $75 cutoff if you're in the US, whereas ours, it's $3.50. It's a lot cheaper.
Well, yeah, true. But they have a much wider range. If I had that much a wider range that I could order vinyl nationwide, I probably wouldn't moan about the $7.95 as much. I probably would, but I'm going to say I wouldn't. You look at the Vinylmation choice on .com compared to .co.uk, and I don't want to just keep rabbiting on about Vinylmation, because obviously it's not just about Vinylmation. Compare all the ranges at .com to .co.uk. The pins, for instance. What can our pin collectors buy? Four pins? Two pins from .co.uk? Something bizarre like that last time I checked. And now go look at .com, where I think you can buy up to, is it 30 pins?
Oh, there's loads.
And it's just, alright, fair enough. They're made wherever. They're shipped to America. It's easier for them because it's America. Then why not address the extortionate amount that they're charging overseas guests to order? We know it doesn't cost that much to dispatch it, because certain ones of us have American friends that'll dispatch it at half the cost for us. But there's got to be some way around something.
Well, I think we need to start thinking about putting these comments to Disney again and see what happens.
It's like this, sorry to rant again, but it's like this buy one get one free fiasco. Didn't announce that Vinylmations were going on buy one get one free. Only certain stores had them at buy one get one free. And why did one store let one person buy them all? Why is there not a limit? Yeah, alright, it's buy one get one free, but it's only four per customer. You get deals in other stores, and in small print it'll say something like two per customer, one per customer. I'm also having a go at Disney, because where did this buy one get one free malarkey start? When was it announced? Why, it was some rumour that went around, and all of a sudden somebody's buying certain Vinylmations that buy one get one free.
Oh dear, love. I'm just so much more mellow than you, aren't I, love?
Well, you are a lot mellow, I suppose. It's just, it winds me up. I've got good money here. Just because I don't have a 6-year-old that wants to dress up in princess dresses, it's like Disney don't want my money. Alright, then I'll go to Evil Bay and give other people my money then, shall I? Because that's what ends up happening.
Oh dear. Or you might have to ask a nice friend of yours who's going over to the States to bring you back things you need.
I don't know who you mean. I don't know who you mean at all.
Well, me neither. I don't know of any friends of yours going away.
But this is where I'm lucky, because I have good friends who are going and that are willing to buy me stuff and bring me stuff back. I've got one over there at the moment who's buying me a set. When I say a set, I don't mean like a whole case. It's just a 2 Vinylmation set. And alright, you know, I can sit here and moan all I want. There could be somebody out there who'll go, well, actually, my little girl or my little boy really like the Disney store. Bully for them. I'm glad they like the Disney store. Don't get me wrong. Disney should be liked by little kids, but what really grinds my gears, and this is sounding a bit like Nick's soapbox, is the fact that, and if you don't get that reference, it's a Diz After Dark reference, is the fact that Disney don't seem to appreciate their adult fans, and I think they need to appreciate their adult fans just a little bit more than they do now. End of ranting.
Are you sure?
Well, I could go on for about another half an hour, but we've got the rest of the show to do.
Okay. Well, I'll just get the last word in then, if I can.
Go on.
I think that... What do I think? I don't know what I think. Right. I think that the Disney store is primarily targeting towards children because they are the biggest market for them. Adults is quite a niche market, because as I wander around in my hometown, there ain't that many adults wearing Disney hoodies. You know what I mean? So
they don't get the chance to buy them, that's why.
Oh, okay, yeah, maybe it's because they don't get the chance, but you must admit there is more child Disney fans than there are adults, maybe.
I agree. And I'm not asking the Disney store to dedicate the whole shop to adults. I'm asking for a little section at the back put a few homeware bits on there, put a couple of snow globes on there, and put some decent Vinylmation displays there, and a decent pin display while we're there. That's all I'm asking for, a little section in the back of the shop. I'm sure they can not use one section of the shop which has got plush on, because let's face it, plush is all around the store.
Do you know what I'll do just for you, Kimster? I will get in touch with a friend of mine who is, without giving too much of the game away, she's in negotiation, shall we say, with Disney on a project, and I'll see what I can ascertain from her, and I'll also persevere with communications with the Disney store to see what can be done. Maybe suggest your idea about delivery into store, and also see if there's anything, you know, that they are looking at to improve on their product range in a physical store. Will that make you a happy bunny?
As long as you tell them that Kimmy wants a shelf at the back with homeware and Vinylmation and snow globes on just for her in the Leeds White Rose store, I'll be perfectly happy.
And is there a particular colour you want this shelf, or a particular height?
Pink, obviously, and not bigger than 5'3".
Oh, we don't ask for much, do we?
No.
Okay, I think we're going to sort of digress and leave this hot potato, because it is a bit of an issue that Miss Goodwin over there is getting a little bit hot under the collar over. I am trying to be the calm, placid one. I do get wound up by it all, I must admit, but obviously not as much as him. And I think we now need to move on there, Kim. Let's carry on, please.
Yeah, let's move on to Stephen's question about the rope drop.
Oh, go on then. I get a chance to rant then, do I?
Go on, I'll let you. We have a question from Stephen Maxwell, and his question goes like this. Hi girls, I have a question about rope drop. I'm wondering where, and if anywhere, does the rope drop show happen?
Ooh, okay. Did a little bit of research on this one for you, Kimster.
Okay.
Okay, firstly, can I just clarify that a rope isn't dropped? Okay.
Oh, well, that's just a big letdown from the start, isn't it?
Well, can you imagine it? Health and safety. They drop a rope and someone trips over it and sues Disney.
Well, let's not call it a rope drop then.
A rope winding up occasion doesn't really sound the same, does it?
Well, I suppose not.
You know, so I suppose, you know, it's like ribbon cutting and all that lot. So anyway, basically, rope drop is when you've gone through your turnstiles at your park and you're corralled in an area prior to getting fully into the park by cast members, and it is sort of collected in by cast members, and then people are allowed to go past. Okay, so no rope, no dropping, rope collecting. So right, I'm gonna go through the four parks to discuss basically what happens. So let's start with the Magic Kingdom. I have never, ever seen this show in person. Unhappy face here. Basically, I've just not been able to get there. Despite getting to the Magic Kingdom well in advance of opening time, I've not physically been able to get to the Magic Kingdom from the Ticket Transportation Centre in time. Now, there are ways around this. If you have your extra magic hours in the morning, you can make sure that you are actually through the turnstiles and waiting for that show. So, you know, anyway, I digress. So, advice is get there up early, because the turnstiles do start turning 15 to 30 minutes ahead of the park opening time. Now, this obviously depends on the crowds. Bigger the crowd, they might let you in a bit earlier. You're allowed up to the tunnels. However, if you're in a tunnel, you're not going to see the welcome show. The welcome show at the Magic Kingdom is performed on the balcony by the Main Street train station. And you'll find characters, citizens of Main Street, dancers singing and dancing along, welcoming you to the park of the day. Now, if you haven't seen it, our good old friend Emma, the Disney Mum UK panellist, together with Phil and Ben, videoed it on their last trip, and it's over on their feed on YouTube. It's well worth seeing. It's lovely. It's a lovely show. As I say, I've not seen it in person. What about you, Kim? Have you seen that show?
What's a rope drop?
Oh, we've done this bit! I'd rather you've not seen it then, love.
I think it'd be safe to say that me and my husband do not get out of bed early enough to attend such a celebration.
So you'll be watching it on Phil, Emma and Ben's video then, love, will you?
I think I possibly might be doing, yeah.
Okay.
We're not very early risers. Even on holiday, we're not very early risers. We like to potter about for an hour or so before we rush out.
Unlike me, who's up at 7 a.m.
7 a.m. I'm still asleep at 7 a.m.
Well, not every morning, only on the park dedicated days. Oh. But anyway, so once the welcome show's happened, you're allowed to go through the tunnels, and there will be cast members holding a said piece of rope to stop you going any further to the attractions and rides, to stop you riding them till the park officially opens.
Is that when they drop it?
They don't drop it, love. I keep telling you. It's a misnomer. They actually collect it. Okay?
Why don't we call it the rope collect then?
We've done that already. Oh my heavens. Do you know? She's in one of them moods at the moment. I'm really, really getting... Anyway. So, there are ways of getting into the park before that, as I mentioned, extra magic hours, or you could be having that ADR for breakfast in the Magic Kingdom prior to park opening, and then you get through, you get to see, have your breakfast, get to see the park nice and early, and then you can pop out and see the welcome show. So,
is that where you've got to limbo under the rope because they won't drop it?
No, you're not allowed to limbo, love.
Yeah,
that's Magic Kingdom. No limboing, darling, no. A limboing. Let's go over to Animal Kingdom. So, Animal Kingdom does a lovely little show to welcome its guests. After passing through the turnstiles, guests again are held up against a rope by cast members. Remember, Kim, the rope doesn't drop. Okay, Mickey, Minnie and the guys come along in a safari pickup. It's kind of neat way to start your day at Animal Kingdom. They do a fancy little countdown and then drive off and the rope is collected. Now, the piece of advice I'm going to give you here is get to Animal Kingdom nice and early so you can get into the line at the turnstiles at the front, so that you're going to be on the rope at the front so you can make your way to the part of the park you want to go. Now, check with your park map. If you're wanting to go to a particular attraction first, decide whether you're going to have to be on the left or the right side of the rope. You ever seen this show then, Kim?
Yeah. Are you really asking me that question again?
All right, you're still in bed. You've missed it, love. I suppose you'll be looking for it on YouTube again then.
If I'm not allowed to limbo, then there's just no point, is there?
Well, that's something I'd pay money for to see. Okay. Oh, my heavens.
I wonder, right, just digressing slightly because I seem to be that way out. I wonder if the cast members have that urge to do like a massive great big skipping rope and people double dutching in the row.
Oh, probably so, love. They've probably got the patience of a saint to put up with people from Yorkshire saying, what, it's a rope drop and you're not dropping the rope? Anyway.
Just imagine them doing that. Do you remember, oh, I don't know if this is just an English thing, do you remember that little skipping round that I'm a little bumper car, number 48? I went round the corner, policeman saw me, put me in jail, put my little bumper car up for sale. 1, 2, 3, 4. Does anyone else remember that, or is that just me?
Okay, listeners, please bear with me a moment while I call for the men in the straitjackets to go and collect Kimmy.
Just me, then.
Yeah. Can I go on to Epcot now?
Yeah, sorry, I'll be here for Epcot. It's because I didn't really say, oh, in the interview, I'm just making up for it.
All right. Well, next time on an interview, you can do all the talking and I'll be quiet.
All right. I'll be quiet for this one, I promise.
Okay. So, Epcot used to have a bit of a show. Alas, this is no more. So, when you've got through the turnstiles, again, you're up to a rope, manned by cast members. Characters do mingle along the other side of the rope and interact with the guests. Sometimes I've seen streamers fly in, other times not. They then start to do a countdown with you, and then the rope is collected and off you go, ready, steady, go, soaring fast passes, here we come. So, I'm not even going to bother asking if you've seen it. I'm just going to go on to Disney Hollywood Studios.
I don't know what you mean.
Yeah. Now, basically, out of the four parks, Disney Hollywood Studios, it's a bit non-existent. Maybe it's me. Maybe I've just missed it. But when I've been to Disney Hollywood Studios, gone through the turnstiles, been able to walk to a certain point, and then there was the good old rope. The rope of death. If you pass my rope, you will be no more. I will kill you. I will not let you limbo under my rope. Anyway.
Shall I send these men in white coats over to you?
Just get me on that, love. So basically, again, there's just a rope. It's not dropped, it's collected. And on the two or three times I've been there at park opening at Disney Hollywood Studios, hadn't even seen any characters, hadn't heard a countdown. I've just seen the rope collected in and off you went to Toy Story Mania. So, Stephen, many years ago, if you can remember what the question was, we've spent 2.5 weeks answering it. Yes, rope drop does still happen at the four parks. It doesn't involve a rope being dropped.
Or limboing under.
Or limboing. And the only one really with a show is the Magic Kingdom, with a smaller one at Animal Kingdom. Epcot, Disney Hollywood Studios, not really that much going on. Hope that answers your questions. Keep them coming, though. I love hearing from you. Right, Kim.
Yes.
I think we better say goodbye.
All right, we'll do the ending now then, shall we?
Shall we do the ending and say goodbye to all our lovely listeners?
We can do if you want.
Or we could just prattle on for another 3.5 weeks. Just keep talking non-stop and publish a 3-hour podcast.
Oh, God, no. 2-hour podcast's long enough. Never mind a 3-hour one. So, as Michelle says, that's the end of this episode. And what a unusual episode it's been. I've been in a bit of a, you know, I was a bit quiet to start off with, but I think I've made up for it in the last 2 segments.
Oh, God, my head's banging.
All that's left for me to really say is thanks to Kathy for coming on and explaining all about guest assistance. And
can I add on that thing about guest assistance, though? I've just remembered our lovely friends over at the unofficial Orlando Universal 100% Oh no, I've forgotten what it's called.
You've well said that in wrong order. The 100% unofficial Universal Orlando podcast.
Did look into how Universal deals with guests that might need some assistance on one of their podcasts. I think it was Show 32. So if you're going to do Disney and then go on to Universal, listen to their show. It'll go through things that's available over there for you as well.
I'll also add, listen to their show in the upcoming weeks because they're having a certain guest on their show.
Oh, you?
Yes, me.
Is that the big guest that they've been dropping hints about?
Yeah, I'm the big guest. I would doubt that very much, but no doubt I will spread some mini minx magic power over there.
Yeah, don't let them be nasty about our beloved Disney.
I won't.
Good on you. Hey, dear. Right. Okay, so we need to tell you how to get in touch with us. Please get in touch with us.
Before we do that, can I just carry on thanking people?
You want to thank people?
Well, I thanked Kathy and then you kind of just took over.
Sorry, I'll shut up now.
Well, I've said thanks to Kathy, so thank you, Kathy, for joining us. Want to say thank you to Michelle for joining me in the feature this week, which was me ranting about the Disney store.
My pleasure.
And a huge thank you to Stephen for sending a question in.
Lovely, Stephen.
And if, like Stephen, you want to get in contact with us, Michelle is now going to tell you the ways that you can get in contact with us.
I am indeed. Right. Easy peasy, 1, 2, 3. Email contact@theminiminxes.co.uk. We have our Facebook group just under The Mini Minxes. Have a little look on there. Or you can follow us on Twitter @TheMiniMinxes. And those are the best ways to get in touch with myself and the lovely Kim.
Yeah.
Oh, so nice.
Well, occasionally.
Oh, thanks.
Our next show is out on the 20th of August. Now,
it is indeed.
We do know who our guest is for that show, and she's definitely well worth a listen.
Disney Girl Power Show.
As to the feature, we ain't the foggiest idea yet, but no doubt it'll be as entertaining as this episode's feature.
Well, we'll have to get a move on and get that one sorted out, chick, won't we? Because times are ticking.
Yeah. And we may even have another Ask Minxie Michelle question time where I might not interrupt her.
Yay!
So that's really it. So all that's left to say is goodbye from me.
A big goodbye from me.
Mini kisses. Mwah.
Mwah.
There's no business like bowl business.